The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Atlanta Vision Institute. The Atlanta Vision Institute was the first in Georgia to use SMILE, the most advanced laser eye surgery procedure. This procedure is done with a high-tech precision laser. It's simple, takes about 6 to 8 minutes in its entirety. It's an easy recovery, requiring minimal post-op care. Most people are amazed at how effortless it is. You're going to experience substantially improved vision just a few hours after this surgery. Dr. Ashraf was on staff at Johns Hopkins University. He's board certified, and he's completed over 40,000 LASIK procedures. So go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute. Check this out. You can mention my name and get 20% off a consultation. To learn more, go to atlanta2020.com/Matt. That's me, M-A-T-T. atlanta2020.com/Matt. Go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute at atlanta2020.com. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. I am on my front porch. You can perhaps hear the birds. It's a beautiful September morning, although it'd be nice if it was like 5 degrees cooler. Drinking the homebrew in the front porch. Don't have any Lake House. Fresh out. Got to get some more Lake House coffee. Speaking of Lake House coffee, they are helping us produce the September 20th live Atlanta Podcast at Joystick. That's a mere 10 days from now. Have you got your tickets? Listen, you know, people are always like, oh, dude, tickets are going. This is not bullshit. This is a very small room. Get your tickets. I will link it in the fucking show. Just, you know what I mean? Like, just go to the thing on your iTunes and just click it. It's there. If not, drop me a PM right now. I'll personally send you the link. How about that? Drop me a freaking PM. Speaking of which, subscribe. Everything you listen to tells you to subscribe, and there's a reason. We need it. We need those subscriptions. We need you to listen to the gosh darn show. Listen, I feel like we're a small but mighty crew of ATLians who found this thing. You're either a friend of mine or an old friend of mine or somebody told you about it, but it ain't a ton of us. It's in the hundreds, not thousands, but we need to make it the thousands, and I'm not sure how we do that. Other than you guys keep telling your friends, I will do my part. My part is bring you killer content, great interviews with the famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, and anyone else I find interesting. Subscribe. Drop me a note. I'm Mappy Davis on all platforms. Isn't that easy to remember? Instagram, Facebook. I don't use Snap anymore. LinkedIn, Twitter, Mappy Davis. All platforms. On today's program, Wyatt Roscoe. Wyatt's a fascinating dude. Wyatt produces, along with some friends, something called the Belt Grind, which is a bike race around the finished and unfinished belt line. Does that sound familiar to you? Well, it's because you've heard me talk about Run the ATL, my little project we've been doing the last couple years. But Wyatt, who has not even done yet his third event, is far more organized than I've ever been. And got sponsors and just a great community of people, the bike community that have to support his event. Super cool. I volunteered the first year at Checkpoint, and I volunteered the second year. Sadly, Wyatt, I ended up helping very much. I brought the boys. We basically hung one sign, and then they had to go, and it was a crazy day. But we still hung that sign, damn it. We hung the fuck out of that sign. Now, Wyatt, it turns out, is up to a bunch of other cool stuff, too. I'll link his stuff. He's got all these other crazy events going on, and I don't know if he hadn't born them yet when we talked, or he just forgot to talk about them, or I'm not remembering that we talked about them. Maybe they're in there. But he does a bunch of cool events, which I will link in the show. I think that's it. Let's get to the program. Away we go.
Where'd you grow up?
Grew up in Wyoming. Grew up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Son of a ski patrol and park ranger.
So they were like Wyoming outdoorsy people?
Hippie ski bums.
That's what they sound like.
Yeah. Pretty fun parents to have in Wyoming,
I would imagine. So, like, you grew up skiing and whatnot?
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up with my dad allowing me to go climb with his friends and, you know, backpacking and a lot outdoors, most of the time outdoors.
And were you like super little, like 6, 8 years old?
My whole childhood, 0 to 18.
Because, like, I have kids, and I try to let them do whatever, and I think, like, well, yeah, there's some kids that just, like, learn how to light fires when they're 7, so.
Yeah, I was that kid. Yeah. It was like, oh, you want to watch TV or play on the computer? Here's a baseball. Go throw it against the chimney. And, like, just go outside. I mean, that was
Did you even have a computer?
We did. Starting 8th grade, we had a computer. We had one of those, you know those TVs where you click it, and it goes...
Oh, yeah.
And they could, like, feel the change.
Oh, yeah.
And one channel that was fuzzy. And so we didn't have TV. We could watch movies, but no TV.
Did you have VCR? Or,
yeah, VCR.
Or were DVDs around yet?
Not yet. So a lot of time outside. Yeah.
And do you remember what you wanted to do when you grew up?
It was a mix. I think there was a marine biology stint.
Right.
And then there was... I think everybody had a firefighter one, didn't they?
Well, when you're really little, sure. Yeah. I just didn't know if you, like, when you started, like, I don't know, early teens, if you had a, like, a, I think I might want to.
There's always the professional skier, professional kayaker, like, culture in Jackson. That
right.
That was, like, the cool thing. If you could make it doing a professional sport, that was.
Right.
That was the biggest kind of. You know, if you were a sponsored athlete, you'd made it.
Right.
And
did you have friends, or did you work, like, Outward Bound, like, that kind of stuff?
No, I guided some trips on the Grand Canyon, but no formal leadership programs in the outdoors.
Because you just applied for the job of, like, leading people?
Again, family, friends saying, hey, we've got a position, you're good on the water, you want to come down? And so that kind of turned into it was just an assistant guide on a Grand Canyon trip, and I've taken a few other private trips down. Because of that.
And what brought you to Georgia?
I got a solar job. So I was working in San Francisco on startups 2 years after college. And both those startups were treadmilling. Our two ideas didn't take off.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore.
Okay. Is that a medical school?
It is.
And you wanted to?
I studied neuroscience. And so I was headed kind of the PhD pre-med route.
Are you super smart?
No.
Do you have a 168 IQ?
Negative. I think I got let into that school because I'm from Wyoming, and they have to have one person from each state.
There's like a requirement, and like, okay.
And there's 500 people in Wyoming, so I got in because of that. but I got turned off from the lab world my senior year at school, and was working on startups and found a love for design in San Francisco makerspaces. And so I got a call from an old solar boss in the solar power industry, and he said, you want to come work at Georgia Tech in the design lab? And I said, absolutely.
I have to interrupt to tell you that in the late 80s, early 90s, we got solar panels on my house.
Wow.
Okay. And my friends, like, weren't sure to be fascinated or make fun of it, but it was easy to tell people, you go right on Springs End Lane, it's the third house on the right, the one with the solar panels. And so there are these big, awkward, just like what solar panels look like back then, right? And I remember asking my parents, like, is this lowering the bills? And they're like, yeah, but the best part is that the company that sold it to us went out of business. We were like making payments and they're out of business, so.
You can stop.
So we was basically like free,
yeah.
Right? But we also would like kick footballs out of my house for like field goals. And so we had to be careful.
A couple of broken panels.
Well, I don't know. I'm more fascinated now talking to you. I should go back and ask them because again, like that's pretty early in the solar panel phase.
I just got given one of the coolest gifts. This is going to show how nerdy I am. Someone decommissioned the Bell Labs solar array and they were one of the first people to make solar panels. And so I got a, you know, panel from the 1970s, which is now, you know, X years old.
Right.
And it was still producing
power. Are we going to talk about solar power on your program?
Potentially.
Okay. Do you know what he wants to talk about?
I do. He has explained kind of the fundamental mechanisms that,
right.
You know, are still alive today.
Right.
So yeah, I'm a nerd. I've got that up on my wall. And it's kind of one of the original Bell Lab solar panels.
Right.
I think that's super neat that 70 years later it's still producing power, not much but some power,
so it works.
Yeah, or mine doesn't, but the system as a whole was still working.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think ours powered anything. It just supposedly was supposed to lower the heating bill, I think.
Okay.
Like, yep. What did they do back then? Do you remember? In like 1989, what solar panels could do?
So it could have been passive solar, which directly heats the water, but they were panels, right? They're electrical panels.
Giant, just like literally like, oh, do you have a pen? Like, here's the, like, okay, so like, it's fascinating for our audio audience right now, but like, imagine like two things, like two pipes, and then this slanted fucking panel.
Yeah.
This giant rectangular panel that went, they didn't move.
No.
They didn't move with the sun.
They're still not much better than that.
Really?
I mean, there's been
solar panel hasn't come far the price, in 5 years.
The price has gone down. They're more efficient, but they still look a lot like that. I mean, they're 6 feet by 4 feet, and you lug them around and you bolt them onto the roof.
Right, but I would think they've got to figure out a way to make that like cheap. Like these were like big, big steel.
They've done some unbelievable innovations and. You know, how fast they can put them on roofs and the minimal amount of metal to attach them.
I think this was like a door-to-door salesman situation. Like, I think they like, hey, we're, you know what I mean? Like aluminum siding. I should really ask my mom about this.
Yeah, that's early adopters. Or a good salesperson.
Right? But I think I remember saying, like, how much, like, when I got a little bit older, like, saying, hey, what do those cost, by the way? And they're like, oh, we lucked out because we were making payments, like $1,000 a month, and that company just disappeared. I'm like, but they still work? Anyhow, so you're in solar, you got a couple startup gigs.
No longer, I'm fully in. I mean, there's always a back burner startup idea, yeah.
See, that's a whole different generation. And when I grew up, like that wasn't like just like a thing. Like you were like the kid that started the lemonade stand and then turned that into the lawn mowing business that then went on to invent something, or you weren't. You then got a job,
yep.
Right? Go to college, get the good job. You couldn't just fucking like, I'm a podcaster, I'm a startup, you know what I mean? So I think that's super cool that like
it's accessible now.
Very.
Yeah.
But I think that's fuck the man. But I think that's like super cool that like you just sort of went on that track.
I've always been drawn to it. I mean, speaking of lemonade stand, I put a backpack on my front and put a Gatorade cooler in it, and then there's road work, and so I'd walk up the line of cars stopped. And it looked like I was peeing into the cup because I had this Gatorade thing on the front of my chest, and I was just, you know, pouring it down there and then handing it to them, and I'd walk the whole line. And so that was kind of my lemonade innovation.
And how much did they pay you?
Not enough. I mean, it was the same prices for a cup of lemonade. I don't know how much, you know, 50 cents or something like that.
And so
more pity money is always.
The drivers or the workers or both?
I think a couple workers stopped by, but mostly the drivers. And then when you get going, the people in the back would see you like basically looked like you were peeing into a cup, and they'd be like, "Oh my god, this guy needs some help." And so you got pity money at the end of the line.
So what brought you here again?
An offer to work at Georgia Tech's design and fabrication lab for a solar company.
And you design and fabricate what?
We were working on a large solar truss, so 130 foot, 15,000 pound Lego set. That you put solar panels on and then lift with a big crane and put over parking lots to provide shade and produce power.
But you have a neuroscience background?
I do.
Which ultimately, people with that degree usually do what?
They are doctors or still getting their PhDs.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I loved it. I mean, my undergrad, I was fascinated by how we perceive the world. And still am, but I'm drawn to working with physical things. That's where I've found my passion.
Can you fix your own car?
On good days, but no, I don't have a. I haven't spent enough time around cars. Bikes I'm good with, and taking something from the whiteboard to manufacturing is what gets me excited the most.
And people always need that guy. I think that's why you've got work, right?
I would say so.
Because there's lots of ideas people, but they can't execute.
Yeah, I enjoy the execution part as well. I think that's equally as fascinating of like how do you get people on board and excited? Because early stage, anything, you have to leverage excitement as far as like, we're going to be do this and we're going to be big soon, but we need help now.
So have you sat on a lot of pitch meetings?
Decent amount, not as many as I'd like. I find those, I love those.
Right.
How do you convince people that it's going to work with nothing?
Right. I call it selling the dream.
Yep.
Right. Like when I started my first company, the one I was talking about, the obstacle thing, like we didn't really have any eyes and ears yet, but I was like, man, we're awesome. I'm telling you. And then like, cause we didn't, they're like, you have any real data? I'm like, no.
But it's coming.
Right.
Yeah.
And now actually with this, it's the same thing. Cause now with that obstacle stuff, we've got 6 years of like, here's the Google Analytics. And now the Atlanta, they're like, how many people listen? I'm like, not a ton yet, but come on, man. Reach people in Atlanta. You know they're listening. They live here.
Yep.
Right?
I feel that. I mean, the shifting to the bike race, that's, I mean, it was like ripe. The city was just ready to go do this. And it was like, hey, let's go ride this with a few friends. Maybe we can have a few more people. And then we had 100 people there because they like want it. They just like word of mouth.
People, right. We got to back up a little bit. So did you immediately plug into the bike community when you got here?
I didn't have a car for 6 months, so okay. Yes, I was biking everywhere.
Right.
And, you know, you find yourself on the Beltline daily because of that.
It's right.
It's just safer, more pleasant to ride on.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's how I learned, that's how I oriented myself, was just biking everywhere.
And did you pass Angel at one point, or did somebody introduce you to him?
I forget how we met. Yeah, overlapping circles. Atlanta's amazing how many, a city of communities and how those circles overlap.
Right.
So, yeah, when you're biking, you bump into Angel, you know, all kinds of, if you're into going to, you know, funny, goofy parties, Angel's there. And so those two things, biking and fun, goofy parties.
Right.
You're going to meet Angel.
Right.
So.
And so did you get together with other people to say, I'm going to put this race on? Or like, how did sort of the birth happen?
Yeah, I planted the seed with 5 friends, one of them being Angel, and just said, hey, I've been exploring parts of the Beltline. You know, I went out with a few rides with Angel, but kind of just, I think it was that Wyoming, like, okay, this is a paved part. Why does it stop, right? Like, apparently there's going to be a whole corridor.
Right.
Beltline, let's, like, chip away at, like, where it goes. And, like, you couldn't bike or walk parts of it, and that was fascinating to me, right? Like the fact that it was jungle within the city that you couldn't even get through,
right?
And that drew me. I said, like, we should show people, we should get more people to see it before it's a perfectly paved path. Like, that was exciting to me. And so 5 friends, we had a meeting saying, like, hey, let's put together a ride with friends, you know, let's get 20 of us out here and go ride the whole thing,
right?
And then they said, well, should we invite other people? Why not,
right?
And then we started to plan kind of what it would look like. Do local companies want to help us out? And then it became a race, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, the first year we had 100 riders, with the goal of keeping it off the radar.
Right.
Right. Because it is like an alley cat.
Right.
I mean,
tell me what an alley cat is.
So an alley cat is essentially a bike race with different locations around a city that those are the only destinations that you have to get to.
Right.
And so you have to, you pick the route, you pick your first, second, third oftentimes, and you race around and you return with kind of proof that you made it to all those stations.
Right.
And so there's no course setting needed. There's no as much structure needed. It's essentially people willing and excited to see the city coming together to race each other in a creative way.
And so you wanted to do a race kind of like that, but...
Yeah, so mine didn't... I think that model kind of came from the idea of wanting to show people the corridor and say, this is coming and it's gritty and there's railroad tracks and it's bumpy and miserable to ride this, but like, you're gonna want to tell your kids that you saw it, because when I started exploring, people were like, oh yeah, check out this, there's 4 feet of kudzu on the east side trail, like there's Ponce City Market, and like my head's just sticking out of the kudzu,
right?
And that's awesome to me.
Right.
Like, I wanted more people to have those pictures around the whole city. Like, that's a cool, you know, way back in 2017.
Right.
Right. Like, that's a cool moment. We're all going to be 50 and, you know, have kids and like being part of the city's growth and change. And,
right.
Like, it's all there, but we don't go see it. Like, we get stuck on our paths to work.
Right.
And like, even riding to work, you go to the same routes. And so.
And that west side between Angel's House and Washington Park came up much quicker than I thought.
Yeah.
Like, because I've watched it grow day by day, week by week, and I'm a little bummed out because that was like my little private running trail.
Totally. I mean, we were last year's race was a couple weeks before it got paved.
Right.
And like there were parts that had just been paved when we rode it, and like the other parts were mud and ready to like. And every year it's going to be like that for the next 5 to 10 years. Is that you lose these wild sections.
Right.
And so getting people in and letting them see that is such a cool thing, right? And hopefully providing the impetus or the excitement to do it.
Did you and the five friends like bother like setting up an LLC or anything like that?
When it started getting bigger, it was like, okay, like, are we doing waivers?
Right.
Should we have something? And so I did file for an LLC just for some personal protection.
Right. But who's like, because you've spent like real money, like certainly more than I have on my thing. Like just like you've got, I mean, I've done swag too, but you have a whole thing going on. So like who's fronting the money? Do you guys just put it in some cash for a little thing and then go, okay, we'll divide this evenly if there's any profits?
So from the first meeting, we said we want to, if we make any money, we want to give it to, you know, a community focused organization.
Right.
And Bearings Bike Shop was kind of the first light bulb.
Right.
And they're an amazing organization. I get chills every time I walk in there. It's just, you know, young, underprivileged kids that don't even look up. They're just helping each other build bikes. And it's a structure that's teaching them how to do that, how to be leaders. So that was our, like, from the start, we're not going to make any money. But how do we fund that was your original question. We had people sign up, you know, like 5 friends, 10 friends. And again, Atlanta's unbelievable as far as, like, it seems like a city in diapers. It's like you can do whatever you want. There's very few rules. Like, if you can rally the people and there's excitement, like, no one says no. It's like, sure, I've got a t-shirt company, and like, once you guys sell these, you can pay us back. And so, like, you know, there's artists. And so we lucked out with just having a good group of friends that knew local artists and local t-shirt makers. And then we also did there's a ton of hand fabrication. Like, it was all the trophies were handmade.
Right.
All our number plaques were branded and sharpied.
Right.
Like, that was by necessity, but also now by choice, what we want to be. We want to be gritty and just kind of a grassroots, under the radar event that's just like, we, you know, a bunch of idiots, a bunch of goofy people pulled this together. And like, you know, as we grow, we'll have more, you know, capabilities to do different things. But like, we made 300 bottle openers with our brand on it this year. And that was, you know, one guy just stepping up and spending, you know, 20 hours doing it. And then 10 more people coming in and helping them finish those things. And those were the nameplates, and people will have those for, you know, years to come and look at it and be like, that was a muddy hell of a day, you know?
Right.
Like, that's, I hope that stays, right? I hope we grow. I hope we don't lose that, like.
And how many people signed up this year?
So we had 220 people sign up this year.
And then how many showed up?
I think we had plus or minus 200 riders.
Right.
Even in the rain. So that was exciting. That was great. Yeah, we doubled from last year, so 100 to 200 in a year. And it was pretty, yeah, I mean, the fact that we recognized it was going to rain and tried to build off that. Like, let's have fun. This is going to be a rainy event. You know,
right.
Show up and blow up. Let's, like, get muddy together.
Do you think, so next year, are you going to, like, cap it at 300 or 400 or just whatever it is, it is?
The first year we capped at 100 because we were worried. We didn't know what we were doing. And this year we didn't cap it, hit 200. I think with more than 300 people and crossing the city, you run into some logistical issues.
Right.
So we'd love to be official and on the radar and registered and have all of that. Finding a route through the city that makes it financially viable is key for us. Because every stop sign is $250 to have a cop there.
Right.
And so if you have 30 intersections, it's not really viable. And so we're headed in that direction, and I think with the right amount of people signed up, we'll have a route that has minimal intersections, and, you know, we'll be official.
But there's not, because I you know, for the running one, I felt the same way. It's like, well, first of all, I can never get the police, but then also, like, if they're just even being on the regular belt line, right? Isn't there some sort of liability, and they're not going to want to sign off on that because people who aren't in the race are on there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that was the first 2 years, we just did an honor system of, you know, if you're going too fast, you'll never be welcome back. Like, we have to trust
I heard you say that, but I'm saying there seems like the city wouldn't allow that. Like, the city would be like, yeah, even if they gave you the cops at the cross points, they wouldn't necessarily allow you to do that.
I totally agree. I think that's going to be a tipping point of when this is kind of a citywide race, is when that's recognized and allowed. And, like,
right,
we have people saying, this is the circle, the bike route that's going around our city. Let's celebrate it today. And, like, have those permissions to do that officially.
So it becomes like the peach tree in that sense. And, like, everybody goes out.
That's the dream, is that, you know, we have a citywide event that, you know, people are racing around the whole thing,
right?
And you know, we have elite athletes doing it, and then we also have the same goofy, gritty costumes, and, like, first place prize and best costume, muddiest rider,
right,
are equal. Like, right, we want it to be everybody's welcome, like, you know, approachable. Like, you know, we want to combat pretension,
right?
Like, we want this to be silly, and,
right,
like, I'm competitive as anybody, and, like, if I get out there, I want to race. But I think most people don't. Like, they just want to ride it and see it. And that's, I mean, from this year, that was 80% of the people. And that was awesome.
Right.
They're out there. We had the checkpoint parties. You see a section that's kind of crazy and muddy. You know, you have fun at a checkpoint. You do a goofy task. And then you ride the belt line. And you understand how nice it is to have 8 feet of pavement.
So I saw the pictures of, like, one of the groups. So that's, like, a lot of volunteers. Like, you had each checkpoint was like this little party,
yeah,
station.
So this last year we had one group just step up. So we had, you know, you did a checkpoint the first year,
right?
And it was kind of like, let's make sure people get to these 4 points, like an alley cat, they get a stamp,
right?
And then we had one person like, hey, we're gonna kind of throw a party, and they put on black ties, had champagne, and just kind of set the bar of, like, this is what this could be,
right?
And so that was an unintended development of the race, of, like, a group of friends saying, we want to take this to another level. And, you know, us just saying, absolutely, run with it.
Right.
And so this year we took that on, and we actually funded the checkpoints. And we said, you know, here's $100 to throw a party. Here are the requirements. You know, you have to have a task for the riders to do. You have to stamp them.
Right.
And you have to kind of have some sort of theme.
Right.
And again, Atlanta has groups of people that are just motivated and excited and creative, and we had four groups of five, of 10 to 20 people.
There's a guy I just thought of who I know would be perfect to do this.
To do one of those?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think what I'm getting from you big time is I just need to ask for more help, because I haven't done that. Like, I say, hey, I need some volunteers, and I always get one or two.
Yep.
But if I said, hey, I want to make a thing of it, can you grab a couple friends and here's some cash to go to the party store or whatever, like you just did, like, I know they would. Yeah, fuck yeah.
It's awesome. It was just four parties around Atlanta.
You got to do mine, and I've got to do yours,
yeah,
right? I feel like you have the easy one, though, because, like, like, people walk mine, right?
Yeah.
I have had to move up the time limits. Right? The first year, I said to people, stop at Old Fourth Ward Pizza, get a slice of pizza.
Right.
I specifically put that in the thing, right? Did you remember Old Fourth Ward Pizza?
I don't think I did.
Okay,
it's
where Jake's Ice Cream is.
Okay.
It's this fucking awesome place. You got awesome slices. They're not there anymore. But people took that to mean they, like, stopped for 2 hours at Krog Street, they stopped for 2 hours at Crowbar, and I had people come in at like 12 hours later. It's like, okay, too much. So I was like, okay, I made the next time limit 10 hours. And then sure enough, the same group, like, took 10 hours. I'm like, okay, now we're talking 7-8. So you can walk the whole thing, but you got to keep moving.
Right.
You can stop and get a beer. You can stop and get a thing, but can't take all day. But I forgot where I was going with this. Where was I going with this?
Just us both.
Oh, right.
Ride.
So you could walk the whole thing if you just can't run 20 miles.
Yep.
I just made air quotes, right? But like to actually bike through that shit is fucking hard. To bike through that kudzu is hard, but I'll do it. Especially if you can find someone who can loan me a good like.
Yeah, shit. We're excited.
Hopefully although my bike's kind of shit. I was gonna say
loan someone me a did it. Someone bike. Did it on a road bike. Someone did it on an electric skateboard.
I saw somebody had a
and a relay bike.
A relay bike.
Someone did it on
and
a relay
I was like,
bike.
Is somebody actually doing this on a relay
did the
bike?
Whole thing on a relay bike.
To the was it trashed to shit afterwards?
I mean, we had a wash station. I didn't see it, but I mean, every bike got totally.
But no, we totally because I happily volunteered, but I'd love to do it and like have you do mine for sure.
Definitely.
Because I'm so not a bike guy, but that's just as an excuse to for just like you saying, well, if I'm not a runner, but like you know, said I have people message all the time like I can't do 20 miles. Like yes, you can. Get with a group. You'll walk, jog it. It'll be fine. You'll have a good time.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think making it accessible because we get people saying, hey, when you say it can be a race or a social ride. You know, is that a social ride for people that are riding all the time?
Right.
Or is that a social ride for people that ride every now and then? And that's a hard question to answer because there are parts that are like, you have to push your bike up a hill.
Right.
And you have to go over railroad tracks.
Right.
And like, but come, it's going to be fun, right?
Right,
like you
exactly.
Want, you want to get people in. I don't want them to get stuck in the middle of, you know, South Atlanta pushing their bikes through mud and
right.
train tracks and like have
right.
a miserable time.
Right.
But there, I mean, with 200 people biking, someone will carry your bike if you're in
right.
trouble. I think there's enough people that we're at a point where it's accessible. And that southern track is likely to get pulled up in the coming months.
I can't believe it. And it's funny because I talk to Angel all the time and he's like, I'm telling you, man, they're going to... And I'm like, no, they're not. And then he just told me that like they're yeah. going to rip up that strip. And I'm like...
So this is the last year that we have 3 miles of Sufferfest on the... train tracks.
Right. So, yeah, dude, like the like literally our first time we went through this section. So, have you like I don't know how much you've covered, but north of Washington Park, right? We stayed on the tracks all the way to Armour Yards. And so there's a
yep.
section called Double Tunnels, which if there's a train coming, there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And sure enough, people literally dodged the fucking train that first year. I had run that thing so many times. And I had flagged it and like never saw a train. And sure enough, on that day, people told me, one group was like, we heard a train and fucking sprinted and it turns out it was above us. And another person was like, yeah, I saw my life flash before my eyes. Now, if somebody dies, that's not good.
Yeah.
It's a fun story if somebody doesn't die. But if somebody, so the next year I was like, okay, we're not doing Double Tunnels.
Yeah, right? I've ridden that and we said no.
Right.
I mean, you get stuck on with a bike.
With a bike, even
I mean,
more,
just
right.
like, but, so we didn't do any active rail, obviously.
But then the other part was like people, there was another section over, I think over North Side, where a train stopped and some people waited and some people said, fuck it, and got on top. And my buddy Jason McNulty always is happy to share the picture he posted on top of a train. And like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like balancing that totally. Like craziness with, right? And it also used to be like, so there was a fence right where, right over Coeur d'Alene there, or Aileen, whatever that street
okay.
is, right where,
yep.
right where that, you know, that, and like, I love that. People were like, some people climbed the fence, some people went through a hole, and now that's gone. And so it's like every year it gets sort of easier, and it's kind of disappointing.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, even when we were cutting trail, there were comments of like, why, we're making this too easy. Right? this is a single track now. Like, there's no... The kudzu's gone.
Right.
And, I mean, one, we want to make it accessible, and I think that's what this race does, is lets people see where it's going and get there before the whole development happens.
Right.
And I think that's really healthy for the communities around it, is to know that it's coming. Because, I mean, some people go, and this is where the Beltline's going. Here's what the impact's going to be. And, like, having people walk it before it's developed... I think is really important for the pace at which it happens and for the communities around it. And that's a goal of the Beltline now, is to have it walkable by the end of this year. And so I think we've made steps just through wanting to do this silly race toward that and getting, you know, a couple hundred people out there to see where it actually goes.
Right, but then the part that is north of Washington Park to sort of make over the hump towards Piedmont, that's gonna be a long time.
That's gonna be a minute. Yeah, it's still active rail. I mean, how do you get around that until that's diverted or that's, you know, I mean, they're actively working on a acquisition plan, but that will be the last section to go.
Yeah, I can't believe. So if they rip that up, that means what, next year they're going to put in the pavement for it?
I can't speak to the like the actual dates. I think we're more than a year out because they just they're just acquiring the land. They just acquired the land, and so I would say 2 years out from the south side being connected. And then when you're getting over 20 at Glenwood on Bill Kennedy, that's a huge development plan. I would say that's 2 to 3 years out. I mean, these are all numbers I don't know.
But they don't. They don't need. But there's already just sort of like sidewalk. You don't really need to develop Beltline there, do you?
I think if you're pouring, you know, thousands of people out at that intersection.
Oh, right.
You know, because if you come where Bill Kennedy dead ends, if that's paved first, it's going to be a dangerous thing. How do you get across 20?
Right.
It's not great right now.
Right. Right. So to give people, Bill Kennedy is that little section, and it ends at, I can't think of the name of that new restaurant that's right there.
Gun Show.
No, not Gun Show. The other side.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Do you know the name of it?
Mariachi.
No, it's not.
No, that's the other end of Bill Kennedy. So it goes from
Muchacho.
Muchacho is the so.
Golden Eagle.
Yeah, Golden Eagle.
It was
Muchacho.
It was the Harper Station.
Yep.
And now it's Golden Eagle.
Yep.
They're building a fucking movie theater there. Do you see that?
Yeah.
That whole
Publix and movie theater.
Unbelievable.
Going in there, yeah.
Unreal. Yeah. That's crazy how much that's.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the other thing about your race is that you're on a Sunday, right?
Yep.
And you start later in the day, you're lucky it was raining, or else how are people going to even get by, dude? If it's a sunny day.
On the east side trail.
That's yeah. Like the east side belt line right here is insane. I mean, for our people, they're running and they're pretty spread out. And it's kind of like a reprieve of like, we've been around no people and now we're around people.
Yep.
But for yours, it's like a bike race and that can't be easy.
No, I mean, it is one of my biggest concerns is that people won't be respectful.
But even if they are respectful, it's just going to take them forever. It's just not fun to like walk your bike on that little tiny.
I mean, the East Side Trail is suffering from its success. It's amazing.
Right.
I mean, it's shoulder to shoulder
right.
on the weekend.
Like but our race starts in the morning. So by the time they get there, there might be a little bit, but yours is like midday.
Yeah.
And that's the other side, by the way, the other side of the progression is the positive part, which is like, now we can end at a brewery and give everybody a free beer. And that wasn't there 2 years ago.
I mean, the ability to host a public event like this in a private space has enabled what we're doing.
Right.
Right? So the fact that Monday Night Garage allowed us to host this amazing event there, we didn't need to pull permits, you know, for an open park space.
Right.
And we were allowed to host.
Lots of parking.
Yeah. I mean, it was an amazing event space and just ability to host a 200 person race with 300 to 400 people showing up and going through that space and, you know, make donations to our causes. But like the combination of a private event space and a public event is just
how long
powerful.
did the after party go?
I think we shut down around 8.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We had a few foot down races on the bikes and slow races inside. And,
I don't know what that means.
Just trying to balance on the bikes and kind of had a crowd cheering on some people that were
dude, and you
doing
had, you had bands. I was looking around because I didn't see people filming, but then afterwards I did, so I don't know where they were hiding, but like that amazing start of all the people going different ways with the fucking band playing. Like I filmed it, but I was kind of looking for, because I know you had like, I don't know if it was just friends or you hired someone to make a video, but like you had like.
I don't think we have that much. A drone was flying at that time.
Right.
So we'll have some cool, you know, where people are going both
right.
directions.
If you need some footage, I got a pretty dope shot.
Yeah.
I was trying to put it on Instagram or Facebook, but I forget why I did, because I got fucking distracted because of my kids. But no, that was like, that was pretty
going
dope.
Down that windy thing and then splitting.
Cause, right.
Because having people go both ways to me is such a funny, like, you're racing, but you don't know where the leader is.
Right, and then did the high five moment work out where the top two racers had to like?
They missed somehow. The top women racers did take a selfie at halfway.
Right,
when you know they cross paths. Going, right.
I'm gonna
going
steal every one of your good ideas by the
way. I think it's. I mean, they're open. They're not all mine. I mean, this race has been really cool to have people just throw in ideas and we take the ones that we think are feasible.
Right,
and say yeah.
But
let's
think.
Do it.
But I think I was like sort of like. afraid to, because like at first it was like, let's make it more like sort of just like ATL centric by making it like, I don't know, like when you get to the end, you have to like shoot a basket at the basketball court, yep, and you can't finish till you make one. Or like, I wanted to add this like other stuff. And then I thought, oh, they suffered on the trail for hours. Like, right, let's not give additional things. But I really like the idea of...
The checkpoints are great. I mean, people really, whether they have to put their head on a baseball bat and spin around until they're dizzy and then try and get back on their bike, they're... It just adds memories, right? Like,
right.
It,
well, because like I said, no one's doing it seriously, and the few that are would happily do it. And like you said, you hid some things, and I did that one year where I hid a couple of medals, and people found them, and I'm like, yeah, I've been too nice. Like, yeah, I gotta make it more, or not too nice, just too, just playing too small. I want to like add create, because people do love, that's what they love. They love this, like, and then I said this to you already offline, but I know personally that I sort of forget the wonder of the belt line and even the finish part, all the amazing art, because I see it often. And the pictures they post, these people post because they live in the suburbs and they never see it. Or after people come as far as Alabama, Tennessee, they're like, look at this amazing trip I took to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And that's what I say now. I say, like, you know, see amazing things, see Atlanta like you've never seen it, because you will. Even paved, you're going to see it like you've never seen it.
Totally. I mean, doing a full circumnavigation of your city, it's something you just don't do normally in one day.
Right.
Right? Especially on foot or on bike. Like, it's such a cool way to see your whole city. You see all the buildings from different angles and, like, do different things. And, like, you put together, like, where your city is and, like, different neighborhoods and how they're related just by slowly walking or biking through the whole thing.
Like, right.
It's a cool way to orient yourself.
Right. And you said that you had a guy on the Beltline committee actually ride some of it with you?
Yeah. He did. Super excited about that. I mean, there's been a shift in leadership, and this idea of getting people to walk it before it's totally ready, I think is brilliant. You know, you get people out there and seeing where it is, and the community starts to, you know, feel some of that, you know, economic benefit and just awareness that it's coming. Because I feel like when it does turn, we already talked about it, it's just done, right? It's just like, there's the pavement, you know, now it's, we're ready for thousands of people to be flooding this, and to get people to walk it and to see where it's coming, I think helps with some of our economic and developmental, you know, issues that we have.
Have you seen the documentary about the guy who started the New York Marathon?
No.
You should watch that.
Okay.
I forget his name, Fred something. So he, when I was thinking of starting this, it totally like pushed me over the edge, because here was this guy that said, I'm going to do a marathon where you see all five boroughs. And people are like, you're fucking nuts. This is like 1975 or something, and look what it's become. So he's like someone for us to look up to.
Yeah,
he's like this amazing pioneer guy. And again, remember, like, running wasn't a thing yet. So people were like, you're a fucking lunatic. You know what I mean? So anyhow, I will find it. I always say I'll put it in the show notes, but I never remember. So
That sounds great. I'll remember that.
We'll look it up. Why don't you look it up while we're talking, actually. By the way, do you want to introduce who I've been talking to? I always like to make sure that I nod people that are in the room.
This is Dan Fearman, a future podcaster. he's just joining to kind of see how it's done and, you know, learn from the greats.
Learn from the master. Look up a New York City Marathon documentary and then just yell it out when you have it. I forgot where I was. Dude, you'll definitely, like, you'll see, like, he's our forefather.
It's cool to see how small those things start, too,
right?
Right? Like, the Peachtree race, someone was just telling me it was, like, 130, you know,
right,
five runners.
Right.
And then, you know, the next year was about the same. And now it's the biggest road race in the U.S.
Right.
So that's always fun to see.
Right.
And I think... Yeah, Atlanta's ripe for these kind of things. It's ready to, like, it's booming like no city I've ever seen.
Do we have an answer yet?
Not yet. Just thinking. We'll have in a second.
So your shift has gone from, like, under the radar to maybe, like, you know.
I think the vision was always to, like, grow it. It was just how long do we want to be under the radar and just enable this goofy, creative race to go on.
Right.
And then, like, at some point, I mean, the goal has always been inclusiveness and, like, let's have the city see what's coming. But how do you keep it, you know, local and like handmade stuff still, and like instead of growing too fast and bringing in corporate sponsors, and like we want it to have that local feel.
Right.
And I think we'll always, you know, only have local sponsors and always donate to, you know, local people helping, you know, people in need. But yeah, the goal has always been to grow it. I think the dream is, you know, that someday you have a race that shuts down the entire belt line and you have competitive elite athletes, you know, bombing the entire belt line.
They'll probably make you go one way though.
I think they will.
You can't give away prizes and not. Okay, we got an answer?
Got an answer. The name of the documentary is Run for Your Life, and the guy who started the marathon is named Fred Lebo.
Lebo. I was going to say LeBouf. So yeah, this guy Fred Lebo.
Fred Lebo, Run for Your Life.
Yeah, so
yeah, watch that.
It's on either Amazon or Netflix or both. Are you ready to take the Atlanta podcast quiz?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Atlanta podcast quiz? Have you made it through an entire episode or you only listened to part?
No, I've never heard the quiz.
Okay, so it's very exciting. It's how I always wrap up the show. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
What is your go-to meal at the Waffle House?
Grand Slam.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you mean the All-Star?
Yeah.
Grand Slam is over
at Denny's?
Is over at IHOP or Denny's, yes. It's okay. You're from Wyoming. We'll let that pass.
Do we have no Waffle House in Wyoming?
Yeah, but you clearly have been to the Waffle House here.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I order the Grand Slam and they look at me funny.
Right. You mean the All-Star.
Yeah.
And I think I'll make that a checkpoint. I'll make that Waffle House a checkpoint.
And say you have to order the All-Star.
No, because that will take too long, but I'm thinking of something because Waffle House is like my jam and there's one right there. What is your favorite restaurant in Atlanta?
I like Argosy recently.
Because you were just there for a comedy show?
That's part of it, but that's also kind of a go-to spot.
Right.
Delia's Chicken Sausage Stands. They got it all, and they have the best breakfast burrito I've ever found in Atlanta.
I concur. What if I told you I had her on the show, and you should absolutely listen to that one?
Yeah, I'd like to hear where they came from and their story.
Delia is, like, the coolest chick you've ever met. Like, the coolest... Like, she's basically, like us, but like she got to be like she's in her 60s and has been super successful, but like she's just like this super rad chick. She started Flying Biscuit and then sold it when they got to two or three of them, sold it to some company. I think that's where she's sitting on a lot of bread, but then opened Delia's, and she's one of my favorite interviews of all time, so listen to that one.
Yeah, I feel like you can feel her coming through the graphic design and the vibe of like her spaces.
Love that spot.
Yeah.
Love that spot. Rank these in importance to you. Braves, Falcons, Hawks, United.
United, Falcons, Hawks, Braves.
I knew you were going to say United, you fucking hipster. All the young people say United first. The older people are like...
It's coming.
I had one guy say like United. He goes, you mean the airline? Like older
You're
people.
You're like, all right.
Older people have a different relationship to... Okay, what is the best festival in Atlanta? Or your favorite festival in Atlanta, I
should say. Cider Fest.
Where's that?
Cider Fest is held at Angel's House. It's one of the coolest community events. And it's two truckloads full of apples that are harvested from random trees around the city.
Right.
And a bunch of apple presses and a bluegrass band. And people come and... kids press apples and make apple cider.
Dude, how have I not heard of this?
It's
I've been friends with Angel for 2 years.
Yeah, it's great. And it's hosted by Concrete Jungle, who harvests...
is it in like his backyard?
Yeah.
I'm going to text him as soon as this is over. I'll keep this running for now. I've not appeared in any of it, but that's okay. What's the best concert you've seen, like that you can remember in Atlanta, the artist and the venue?
What is my favorite? I saw Kaleo recently, and that was a fabulous.
Then which venue was that?
That was at the Tabernacle.
I have no idea who that is, but I will take your word for it.
Yeah, it's good. Look them up.
What are they called?
Kaleo.
How do you spell that?
Kaleo, I believe.
Okay. And the final question on the quiz is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
I think the CEO of the Beltline.
Yeah.
His vision and how he's shifting it and how he's getting people to come out and make an awareness.
What's his name?
Brian. I'm gonna slaughter his last name, so I'm not gonna.
And is he the one that?
Yeah,
that he rode with you.
He did.
Can you make that introduction?
I would love to.
Let's do that.
Yeah. He'd be great. Really open to new ideas, trying to embrace the community, and I think he's going to do a great job. I got really good vibes from him. So, yeah, that'd be my suggestion. Or Concrete Jungle. That was the group, the nonprofit that harvests fruit trees around the city and donates them to homeless shelters. Cool organization.
All right. I'll do both, dude.
Awesome.
All right. Well, good chat.
Thank you for doing this.
Alrighty, that's gonna do it. Live, September 20th. That's a Thursday night. Joystick. Wait a minute, 10 days from now? Yeah, that's a Thursday night. Joystick, you can come see special guests, people you've heard on the show, new people you've never heard before. The list isn't done. That's how up to the minute we are with this thing. It's gonna be crazy, and I think it'll be fun and a nice thing. So come check out live performance of the Atlanta podcast September 20th at Joystick. I appreciate you. I need you to tell friends. Do you hear me? If you're appreciating what I'm bringing in your ears, tell a gosh darn friend. And then drop me a note to tell you did. Drop me a note. Go, hey, Matt, I love the show. I told a friend today. All right? All right, gotta run.